friends and listeners, welcome back. My name is Henrik. Thank you for tuning in today. After Red Eyes Radio, we continue to have conversations surrounding the questioning of so-called authority and the structure of serfdom and servitude that you've been led to believe that you've been born into. RedEyesCreations.com is our main website. Also, take a look at RedEyesMembers.com, our members' website. This is where you can find more information about our independent investigative radio program and, of course, follow us on a more regular basis. We have news, videos, commentaries, films, and much more for you guys there. We have RSS feeds, social networking channels, and there's a number of ways that you can listen to our program. Today we're talking with Mark Stevens, a voluntarist essayist and talk radio host from Phoenix, Arizona. He is the host of the No State Project. Stevens is also the author of the book Adventures in Legal Land, an examination into the legal and political systems of the United States. His latest book is called Government Indicted. We're going to talk more about that, but also government violence and the Stockholm Syndrome. Thanks for coming on, Mark Stevens. Great to talk to you. Thank you for coming on the program. I've known about your work for a couple of years now, I think, so it's good to finally talk to you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity to be on.
You bet. Now, you have a lot of interesting things behind you pertaining to, of course, investigations into government, IRS, the validity of taxation, and just so much more. But as a way of kind of introduce a little bit more to our audience, what's your backstory in this particular, or these topics, as I should say? Maybe you can just share with us how you kind of got involved in this, Mark.
Just to be brief, I appreciate that. I had a labor dispute back on Long Island, New York, where I'm from, and it turns out that the individual who owned the company owned the building that the court was located in, so it kind of was not a surprise then when I had lost, and after spending weeks and weeks putting together all my brief and my facts, and I had my law, and then the decision was judgment for the plaintiff, and boom, that was that. And the judge walked off the bench, and the company's attorney smiled and walked out of there, and I'm standing there like an idiot. And I started researching more and more about the legal system after I came out to Phoenix, Arizona, and stumbled upon a lot of the Patriot stuff. And some of it made sense, some of it didn't, and so through some diligent research and actually hands-on experience, because most of what I've done is actually hands-on in the court,
yeah,
as opposed to just spending hours in a law library, started to realize that the whole thing, the whole nut was a scam. It wasn't that the government, as we know, was just like the American one, was good at one point, and it was corrupted. It turned out the whole thing was a scam. The whole thing completely fell apart the more I, as I examined it and just looked at the evidence. And the evidence was not the same as the public relations, the PR, the laws, and the civics lessons that we're all given. It turned out that we're all just people. There are no citizens. There are no residents. There are no states. There are no cities. There is no government. It's just a gang of killers, thieves, and liars. And the more I took that evidence and applied it in the courts, actually when I'm working with defending myself or somebody else against a bureaucratic attack, the more I looked at things as they really are, and I didn't see them as agents or a judge, I just saw them as people, the more effective it was at in interacting with them and getting them to drop their attack.
So let's kind of expound on that a little bit, what this means. What is this system that we can see of bureaucrats trying to enforce their rules written on their paperwork? What is that then? How do we define that?
Well, they're just like a law is nothing more than the whims or the scribbles of the insane. It really is. It just comes down to a man or woman or a group of individual men and women wrote a rule down, called it law or a constitution, and then it magically applies to everybody within range of their guns. And that's really how it operates. The law applies to anyone they point a gun at. That's what it comes down to. And I've had over 10 years experience of dealing with these people, and most of what I do is asking questions to bring out the fact, the clear evidence that they are, that they have a gun, that, look, under all that paperwork is a gun. So all the questions are going to get through those fictions, all that nonsense. It's the law. No, it's just your say-so. And you have a gun that says this is, your gun says that I'm going to do X, Y, Z. And, So what I do is just to uncover that. I uncover the gun in the room and make them very uncomfortable. And by doing that, you're saying, look, I can show and have them admit it's just their say-so. There's no actual evidence to show that the Constitution laws actually apply to anybody. It's just because they said so. And when we call their bluff, most of the time they tend to drop the attack, which is nice.
That's interesting. So the papers and the letters that's on that paper is basically just a fiction. So how did it attain the level of power that it does seem to hold today?
Well, we have been conditioned for, you know, what, 10,000 years or more to believe that when a rule is called a law, that it is somehow special, that there is, and people actually believe this stuff, that there are people that are critics of mine that actually believe that when you call a rule a law or a constitution, that it is magical.
Yeah.
I'm not even trying to be funny. They actually believe that it's not a matter of evidence, and evidence is not required to show that the law actually applies to you or that the Constitution applies to anybody. They believe this stuff because if you read some of the critics of mine, that's what they'll tell you. They will say, well, Mark just does, you just don't understand the law. Law does not require evidence to prove that it applies. Oh, so it's magic. You either have evidence or it's magic. And I tend not to believe in magic. But that's what they want us to believe. I've even had federal prosecutors admit that they can't prove that the Constitution laws apply. That the only way that they can prove that they apply is to prove it was violated. And I'm talking, how about no? You can't prove that a rule was violated until you first prove it applies. And it's called logic. And unfortunately, people with guns really don't have use for things like logic and critical thinking and questioning and open, honest investigation.
So run that through us a little bit, how that works then in that fictional world of law and everything else, and how they apply rules to something that happens out there. Let's say if someone receives a ticket or they get fined for something, etc. As far as I've understood it, it mostly relies on the fact that people are just voluntarily agreeing to it without fighting it, obviously, right?
Well, I don't see where it's voluntary, though. Where is it voluntary when you, like...
Well, I mean, they're voluntary in terms of that they're agreeing to that it's right. It doesn't mean that they maybe, consent to the behavior, I guess, but they voluntary in the fact that they don't say no, right?
Well, we can only look at these as, as an individual. Does the individual have the free choice to to comply with the rules and pay taxes, or are there severe consequences for not doing so, for not complying with these orders called law? And nobody has, as an individual, you don't have a choice. You either do it or you go to jail. It's just that simple. So because it is pay or get shot, do this or go to jail, because of that, nobody really has a free voluntary choice.
Right.
Whether they're
sure.
going, so it is a form of serfdom. It is a form of ownership and slavery. There was someone, one of the Angola Three, was on the radio yesterday talking about how his perceptions changed after spending 30 years in solitary confinement. And
no doubt,
he was very lucid at least yesterday, and he realized that when you're in North America, for example, or anywhere where there is a government, which is just a gang of killers, thieves, and liars, you are not free. You are in jail. You're just, according to him, and I think he's absolutely right, you are in a minimum security. You get to have a home that they let you live in, and you can move about sort of freely on your own, as long as you have, a driver's license and identification. And then if you are charged with violating the sacred writ, the Constitution or the laws, whatever they're calling it, then you go to a maximum or a higher security prison. So we're all walking around, and it's just like Russell Means would say, or so many members of the Black Panther 40 years ago. I say, welcome to the plantation, everybody.
Yeah, well, and the confines of this jail is, of course, only, well, it is noticeable all the time, but really when people, if we talk about regular people who are out there in the world, when they bump up against the edges of that system, people usually stay within the defined outlines, if you will, of, this is where you can, live, here's where you can do this, etc. But it's usually in situations where there is some kind of conflict or they're trying to do something that's a little bit different outside of the box. Even traveling to a certain extent, you feel that, all right, wait a minute, I'm like a sheep in a playpen here. And that's really when you feel it, when you step into like international, you know, waters or land or something like that, crossing a border, simple things like that.
I don't have any actual direct experience doing that myself. I do know that in a lot of people that have traveled internationally, and yes, you could be, you know, if you do not have your permission from your master to show the other master, you know, it's kind of a professional courtesy.
Yeah. That, yeah.
So the masters in Canada who own you will give you a card called a passport, which is your permission to, as a chattel, piece of chattel, to then be able to, with a few hours inconvenience, be permitted by the masters and the owners in this part of North America to travel between Canada and, let's say, Montana or whatnot. But it is definitely a slavery system. You need permission to do just about anything. And I want to address what is a common statement. Is that, well, you're allowed to get on the radio and complain, you're free to do that. That's really not my definition of freedom, though. Just because I can, you know, complaining about these killers, thieves, and liars that are stealing $16 trillion worth of energy from the economy every year, that's not really freedom. Anybody can complain. That's not freedom. And it demonstrates an almost complete lack of understanding of what freedom and autonomy really is, to say such stupid things.
Well, indeed, and now more than ever, I think, is the time to question the behavior of governments worldwide, considering their behavior and their track record. Yet most people fall back in line, and they have an outlook that if those crutches, if you will, that we loosely kind of lean on, were to disappear, they have a mindset that the option would be even worse. What were going to happen, you know? Total anarchy, right? And then off we go, right? So, well, I hate to bring this up. We always do that. But, you know, let's do it. I want to hear your take on this.
Well, you know, one, you always want to, you know, the beginning of wisdom is calling things by what they really are. And, of course, anarchy literally means without rulers. It's not without rules. It's without rulers. So,
yeah.
You know, we live – I'm an anarchist in that sense, and that I reject the concept of authority and of a ruler. I see them as owners, and they're vicious psychopaths, and they should be – you know, they should be defended against. Use, you know, whatever morally, justified defensive force should be used against them to stop them. When they are actually attacking you, which is most of the time. So the idea that anarchy is somehow evil and chaos is just the result of massive propaganda over the last 200 years to demonize a free voluntary society, one that does not accept rulers. It's such a ridiculous concept. And I think to address what you mentioned before, I think a lot of what we're going through is just faulty thinking. People are not looking at things critically, because if you examine things critically and you start with the evidence, you will come to the conclusion so many of us have already done that call ourselves anarchists or voluntarists or abolitionists.
Yep.
That there is no government. These are just people. They're just people. And if all we did was change our perception and say, you know what, I'm just going to look at them as people – every situation that you deal with them, if you look at them as just men and women, so much of the fog clears. And you start to find out, and I've done it, I did this at a hearing in New Hampshire a couple of weeks ago, you start to realize that 95% or more of what they are saying are pure abstractions to cover up the fact that they are just men and women. I had someone on cross-examination, I said, well, when you say you work for the government, you're talking about just people like yourself. They would not allow an answer to that question, because it is so damaging when they're trying to say, the government has jurisdiction over you. What do you mean by government? It's people. How did you acquire this control over my life, liberty, and property? You're just people. And the only thing that it can give you is another abstraction, the law.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? The law is just the say-so of a politician. And I'm not making that up. Even the Supreme Court agrees with that. I mean, it's the obvious. So what it comes down to, and I've asked them this, so I have to follow your orders because you said so. Like I'm talking to an IRS agent or, a zoning agent or something like that. And so I have to follow your orders because you said so. No, 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 no. It's the law. Oh, so it's because somebody else said so.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's as complicated as you need to make it.
So it's really a philosophical outlook, if you will. It's something that needs to change in your perception about how you view these things. Because again, I go back to that idea, it's we who are we're allowing them to take the power that they've taken from us.
Yes, because we actually accept them as something, and this is why I call the state the largest church in the world.
Right.
It's religious in nature, because people, they accept the concept of authority, that someone like Barack Obama or Julia Gillard or, you know, any one of these so-called, you know, politicians, that they're something more than just ordinary people. That, oh, you know, it's like the crap that we had 15-something years ago when the Monica Lewinsky thing and all these hardcore Republicans and Democrats saying just absolute nonsense. You respect the office. You don't have to respect the man. What are you talking about? What does that mean? They're just people. They're vile, sick, psychopathic people. There's nothing that they have no more power than we have. They only have the only power that they have is what we surrender to them by buying into this concept that they are somehow more than just an ordinary man or woman.
Yeah. So let's break down some of those barriers for people then. I mean, I think the perception many people have is that these people are bound, you know, by certain rules themselves in terms of how they write the laws and everything. The system is built on, you know, checks and balances. We have a tradition here and how, you know, we right, want to live and everything else. These are things that people, I think, have in the back of their minds as they're thinking about what the law system is, if they even go there.
Well, I think what most normal people have, clear thinking people have, is a principle of governing our own behavior that we learn by the time we're 4 or 5 years old, and that is you don't attack other people. You know, it's based on, you know, the non-aggression principle,
right,
that this is my body, not yours, and unless we have an agreement, it's off limits. And so, you know, the non-aggression principle is that it is wrong to initiate physical violence or physical force against somebody. And in this is something that we all understand. You can only speak for yourself. So the question that I ask people, look, do you want to be attacked? No. Great. Now we're on the same page. And from there, you've now got a core principle. I don't want to be attacked.
Yeah.
Nobody else does then, you know, so regardless of the product or how desperate you are to protect me, I don't want you attacking me any more than you want me attacking you. So from there, it all comes from that. So you hear a lot of these talking heads, you gotta get the first principles. They don't actually mean it. They're not consistent with it all. And try to get one of these talking heads on like Fox News to actually define what the first principle is they're talking about. And there's nothing but vague nonsense. We come out as voluntarists or anarchists and say the principle is the non-aggression principle. And like I've simplified it, you know, in my book and on my website, that you do not force people to pay you. And you don't force people at the barrel of a gun to protect them or to provide services. And most people that I've spoken with admit no exceptions to that. And so when you then look at, well, factually, what is government? What actually is it literally? What can you and I prove right now what government is? Oh, it's just men and women providing a service of protecting life, liberty, property. That's what they're supposed to be doing. We can prove that there's just men and women. And then because it's at the barrel of a gun, it's not consistent with your core principle, which is not to use aggressive force and violence against others.
I wanted to ask about some other kind of examples, I guess, that you've had as well. You spend a lot of time on the phone talking with IRS agents. As you said, you've been helping people in court and everything else, and we've had discussions with other guests on the program as well of how you can – interesting developments in terms of how you can kind of paint certain people into a corner, if you will, in terms of having them actually – define, if you will, both the jurisdiction in some cases, but basically just defining terms and words that they use as well.
Yeah, when I talk about my new book, which will be done, you know, formally released by the end of the month, Government Indicted, is to look at that, what the process that people are actually going through. And so there's an actual technical term for what people are doing and why governments or these people, killers, these lines we call government, why they're still able to do what they're doing, which is human farming. And that's called reification. And that is the process or the thought process where you take an abstract concept and you act as if it's real. The idea of property or of rights, legal rights, are all examples of reification. Citizens, residents, nations, countries, this is reification. There's no such thing as a country. That's why if you go in orbit and you look at a picture of the Earth, there are no borders because they're imaginary. Someone just made it up. They're not real. And when I am speaking with these IRS agents, I know that most of what's coming out of their mouth is a lie. I know there's no evidence I'm a citizen. I know there's no evidence the Constitution could apply to anybody in the conversation. I know that you can't prove my presence within the state any more than you can prove my presence within the Catholic Church just because there are lines on a map of Phoenix saying I'm within that diocese. It's pure fiction.
Yeah.
And it operates the same way politically. So when you're engaging these people, yes, I want to get certain admissions on the, first because I'm going to paint them into a corner because I know they're lying. And the only reason why I can do that is because they are acting dishonestly, they are lying, and they are just trying to steal my property under the guise of taxation. And it is theft. They will actually argue with you. I shouldn't say argue. They will disagree with you when you mention it's taxation and that they are taking your property by force, by under threat, duress, and coercion. They've told me that it is not threat, duress, and coercion when we, the government, do it.
Wow.
Yeah. Suzanne Small of the Franchise Tax Board, she's in the legal department, and she's on their website. Anybody can look her up and call her and ask her about this stuff.
Mm.
If when they threaten and coerce you to provide documents and money and returns, when they force you to do it, it's not really force because of the magical word called government. That's why I can speak from personal firsthand experience after dealing with hundreds, if not thousands, of these agents and have gotten the same stupid comments from them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying every bureaucrat looks at it that way, that every scumbag politician looks at it that way. I don't know. But every single one that I've spoken to, they believe that. It's magic. The Constitution is just four pieces of paper, but it's magic because it applies to everybody on the face of the earth.
Yeah. Well, what would you say to a lot of people that put a lot of trust in the Constitution, if we stick to American jurisdiction here in this case? And basically people put a lot of trust in it's just about fixing the system, or rather maybe even in some cases getting the right people in control of the system, right?
Well, I would say it's misplaced trust. I mean, Lysander Spooner in No Treason, the Constitution of No Authority, he ends with a very, very... I mean, he sums up everything in just a few sentences. He said, whatever the Constitution may or may not be, this much is true. The Constitution has either given us the government that we have, or it has been powerless to stop it.
Yeah.
In either case, it is unfit to exist. And like Spooner wrote, it's just as true now as it was when he wrote it in 1869. The Constitution has no inherent authority. Has no authority at all except as a contract, and it doesn't even purport to be a contract. And even if we assume it is a contract, I'm paraphrasing, even if we assume that it was a contract in 1787, they're all dead. And nobody signed it in any way to make them responsible anyway. If you go to the Constitution, it didn't apply to anybody because it says in witness thereof, nobody signed it as a party.
What about in those cases where we have a signature, let's say, like again, if we go back to the U.S., the birth certificate, right? You sign that. What does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything other than you did something under threat, duress, and coercion. You put this information down to avoid going to jail. It is actually, and it doesn't. And this is something I get all the time. Well, Mark, not everyone. Name one person who's gone to jail. Well, just because I go into a bank and threaten to kill everybody if I don't get the money and I don't actually kill anybody doesn't change the nature of the crime.
Right.
It's the crime is the threat. If I threaten to kill someone, that's wrong. And I don't have to carry it out for it to still be wrong. And the fact that on the books, there in every so-called jurisdiction, there is the rambling of the insane, that it is a misdemeanor. It is a crime not to do the birth certificate. So it doesn't prove anything. It's just like well, Mark, why would your client have filed the tax return if he wasn't a taxpayer required? He did to avoid going to jail. Because what did a critic say when we talk about there's no whenever I say that there's no evidence, it's an issue of fact. There's no evidence that the law it applies to anybody and that anybody has any requirement to actually pay taxes. Well, look at. You, Mark, you idiot, look at Wesley Snipes. He's in jail. Yeah, that's how he's not required to pay taxes. You pay taxes or you go to jail. But there's no requirement to pay taxes. To say that, well, we threatened you. If you do not pay us, if you do not do our bidding, we're going to put you in jail and take all your stuff. That's not the same thing as being required. And anyone who tells you that you could be threatened with jail and to be terrorized, you and your family, that somehow is the equivalent or the creation of a liability and an obligation and a requirement for you. No, you're talking with somebody who has no concept of rational, what a rational thought is, and has never engaged in any kind of critical thought and critical analysis. When you force someone to do it, they're not actually required to do it. They're doing it out of, to avoid the severe punishment.
And these are also people who are ultimately educated by the very government, itself. So, to be able to, I don't think that they would enable this kind of level of critical thinking in these people so that they could see through the lie. But the fact is that many people are suffering from a kind of a Stockholm syndrome in terms of the fact that they have the promises of, you reverse the situation on them. They're actually protecting you against all these other criminals out there. You know, that's how they managed to do it.
Oh, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I go through the Stockholm syndrome in quite a bit of detail in part of the book when I go through the psychological trauma and damage that's directly caused by the government concept. So you get this, they lie to you and say there'll be chaos and who will protect you against the Al-Qaeda? If not, well, we don't need protection against the Al-Qaeda. We need protection against you.
Yeah.
You're the guys. You're the ones with the drone strikes. You're the ones who are killing Americans. You're the ones killing people all over the world. Cops are killing Americans every day. But you mentioned the critical thinking, and there's something in school, and there's no critical thought directed at the concept of government. So we go through school, and we're told that in a democracy, the government represents the people, and the government is the people. No, it's not. Well, Mark, where's your evidence? I'm a very evidence object. It should all come from the evidence. All our opinions should be drawn from the observable facts. And if the facts change, then the opinion changes. And what you see is the easiest way to show that we are not in control as individuals, and we are not the government, is the sheer fact that, and the simple irrefutable fact is, all support is compulsory. You pay or you get shot. That's how I know it's not by the consent of the governed. You pay or go to jail. And it is, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
So if you actually were to engage in any kind of critical thought and look at the evidence, well, let's look. The PR is that we're the government, we're a democracy, and that they govern by consent. Let's look at the actual evidence. See if the evidence confirms that opinion. Let's do a study. Let's look at the evidence. Well, I know it's a felony not to pay taxes. You go to jail, and you will be terrorized. I know that. I've gone through it. I've worked with many people who have been terrorized by the IRS. They will not only go after you, they go after your family, and they go after your business account. So those facts in and of itself are enough to show it's complete horse crap that we are in a democracy and that the government, this gang of kills these liars, governed by consent.
Do the rules that they have invented them for us apply to themselves as well, or are they above that law that they write?
Well, let's take a look at that. Let's see. Well, let's look at the evidence. Now, if a congressman Well, let's look at a judge, for example. This is a really good, because this is where the House of Cards really started, you know, falling apart for me, you know, 15 some odd years ago. A judge can commit all sorts of crimes. Now, they can threaten, they can intimidate, they can assault, and they can order the false imprisonment of any one of us indefinitely. We already have indefinite detention. It's called contempt. There's not a thing that you and I can do to hold them accountable for those crimes. Nothing. You cannot sue him. He has got absolute immunity. He would have to be prosecuted in order to be held accountable. And even if he goes to jail, like those two psychopaths about the kids for, you know, the kids for cash, even if they do go to jail, the victims are never made whole.
Yeah.
Congress, for example, these maniacs, well, not maniacs, these psychopaths, they have written enshrined in their sacred constitution, they are immune from prosecution, and not only from criminal prosecution for what they do on the job, they're immune from even being questioned on what they do on the job. You cannot question them for what they do on the job. It's right there in the Constitution, and they put in their own little sacred writ. You cannot question a federal debt. So there's evidence, again, of a separate class.
Yeah, I've always been very intrigued with who makes, you know, kind of a judge and what do you know anything about the process they actually go through to end up, you know, sitting in that chair with their black robe and everything else?
Well, the general process starts out where they get out of law school, an accredited approved law school, where the Supreme Court, which is just lawyers, approves, you know, they have to approve the court, the school. So they're being, you know, I call it a cult because they have all the same things of a cult. They even pray to each other. Yeah, I can't make that up. So once they get out of law school, a lot of them will, the bar cult will then go into the prosecutor's office. That's where the overwhelming majority of your judges, whether it be local, state, or federal, the overwhelming majority are prosecutors first. They are conditioning. They are being conditioned to be company men. They represent the state. The state's always right. And that's where they start learning all this. That's where. So you've got these judges, which are for. So the way I look at it is you've got former prosecutors giving current prosecutors all sorts of favors, which then are going to be repaid later. Because nothing in politics is free. There's always a string attached. So you've got the former prosecutors giving themselves absolute immunity. That's a matter of a historical record. You can go right in there and show that the absolute immunity that judges have was created by judges, former prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
Those same former prosecutors gave the current prosecutors absolute and qualified immunity. It's not like some, you know, legislators, which are just people, said, you know what, it would be a really good idea to give some of the most powerful people on the planet absolute immunity. So prosecutors, while you and I can prove and have a former prosecutor in a robe admit that it was a malicious prosecution, it was misconduct, and it was criminal, we can get the ticket or indictment thrown out. But you cannot sue the prosecutor and hold them accountable because they have ruled it's part of the job. Malicious prosecutions are part of being a prosecutor. I'm not making that up. Because what they do is they excuse them and they extend them immunity for functions of the office. And so there are many, many cases where they complaints were brought about where there was no jurisdiction, it was malicious. And they were thrown out. And you cannot do that. He's immune for what he did on the job. It's extremely rare that they hold a prosecutor accountable. Mike Nafong of the infamous Duke lacrosse scandal was one of the few. He got disbarred, and then he had to file bankruptcy because of all, you know, some other lawsuits. But it's extremely rare.
One example.
Well, yeah, Mike Nafong is one of the one of the few recent examples of a prosecutor actually being thrown at, not only taken out of office, but he was disbarred and destroyed financially, which is a nice story.
So, what do you make about who wields the if there is such a thing control behind? Well, we can talk about the judges themselves, of course, in terms of how they make individual decisions in certain cases and everything else, but. how would you define the small group that it seems to be that are kind of in control of this system, and do they ultimately, you know, bow down to someone else, do you think?
I believe that the higher you go, I like what the Michael said in The Godfather, that the higher he went up in society, the more corrupt it got. And I think that, which is why you have, look, you look at the drug war for, as a really good example that I use in the book when you're talking about these favors. The cops are the first ones on a scene, usually on a bust. There's going to be a tremendous, usually there's going to be a lot of drugs and there's going to be a lot of cash. And so it's just like the mafia. They're only going to report, and this is a matter of historical record. It's a systemic problem in all police departments. Anybody, yeah, like CopLock, which is a couple of friends of mine run that, CopLock.org, they got a ton of this information on there, right from the government themselves. The cops are some of the worst drug dealers out there. They have immunity, and they don't have to pay for their drugs. They just steal them. So what happens is, picture this. You've got the cops that are supposed to be giving as a forfeiture the drugs, the cars, all the properties that they take on a bust, and the money. Now, you know they're not giving all the money to the prosecutor. But the prosecutor's going to look the other way because they're continually bringing in all this cash that's going to go into his budget. That prosecutor is then going to become a judge who knows damn well what's going on.
Mm.
Now, beyond that, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint exactly who's in control. Who has the interest? You follow the money. Who has an interest in keeping us on a plantation? I would say it's always been, if we go back to, like I do in the book, I trace back to, let's say, you know, Rome and Greece. Who were the ones that started with legislators and legislatures and things like that? And who were the legislators? The rich. Like if you go to Greece, it was the rich landowners, the slave owners. They had a vested interest in keeping this structure of society in place. So I would say it would be probably the wealthiest 15, 20, or 30 families that have been passing down the money for hundreds of years that are probably ultimately in control. Government's just a tool. It's just a tool.
Right.
The Federal Reserve and the banks could not do what they do if they did not have a tool called government and a taxing structure to force everybody to use their credit. It's not possible. All of it's made possible by the tool called government and this concept that ordinary people can lie, steal, cheat, and kill if they call themselves government.
Yeah, it's the current patricians, and I believe that this struggle for power has been going on since the dawn of man, pretty much. And it's just amazing how it continues and how we today have ended up in a system where people then have, I mean, to a certain extent, in the past, it was known. I mean, if you didn't follow the rules of the king, he'd take you by the intestines and hang you up in a tree to demonstrate to everyone else what happens if you don't abide by the rules. And you can't do it in that term today. Perhaps you can do it in other ways, but it's slowly shifted over to a kind of a, now there's a perception that there's, like as I said, kind of checks and balances in place, and it's much more controlled than that, and they can't just do what they want, right? This is how they've managed to steer the system over into this category, if you will.
Well, it's all geared towards keeping the structure of society in place, and it's the easiest way that I have to look at it. There's a caste system at work, whether you're in the United States, whether you're in Canada, Australia. There's a caste system. There is definitely a pyramid shape to society. We're on the bottom. And, you know, what they're doing is to keep that power structure there, which is why they don't. So even if you don't have orders from on high to these local judges, what else explains why the judge will start screaming at the top of his lungs and threatening a peaceful, nonviolent man like myself with jail for doing nothing more than addressing him by his first name? Now, you can say that that's disrespectful. I don't see it that way. Somebody forces you, sometimes with a death warrant, to be in their room at a certain date and time. Are they entitled to any respect?
No.
So whether the judge and there's some back, and I go through in the book, it's more held in place by these concepts, and that the judge wants to maintain his position in society. So he may not think that there's any legitimacy to the concept at all. But he's getting his, and he's not going to let it go. He is a privilege. He has a position of power. He's got a small army at his disposal. He's completely immune from any civil liability whatsoever. He can never lose his job in most situations because it's for life.
Yeah.
He is not going to tolerate any challenges to that structure, whether he's getting orders from on high or he's not. It's one of these self-perpetuating myths. And that's why when you go in and you do not address them as your honor, that is taken as a personal attack against them. You are not buying into the perception that he is something other than Joe. And he is only Joe.
Yeah, of course.
He's just Joe. I've actually, had five cops throw me out of a building across the street because I called Joe Gray Joe. And he had me thrown out of the building in a fit. And then I went to the building across the street, and I got thrown out of that one. So
it's all about perception, keeping that up. I have the diplomas on the wall, what do you have kind of thing, yeah.
Right, because if you go to somebody who's an authority on math or an authority on science, you're going to, someone like Einstein, one of these guys, they're not authorities in the sense that they're going to kill you if you do not comply with their orders. That's what a cop is. They're authorities in that they have gone through and have studied and have done the experiments and they've got the facts and they continually examine things. And so they know a certain subject. And if you were to say to them, someone like Einstein, I really got a problem with your theory, of relativity. Does he start screaming? Does he start yelling? Does he call the cops to have you arrested? No. All he does, like a rational does, is if you've got a difference, just present your evidence and let's hash it out. That's what peer review is supposed to be about. Let's come to the table but no. Not with these psychopaths called government. You call them by their first name or you dare question their system and they go crazy. They cannot cope with you. That's why I call them psychopaths. They have the coping skills of a child. They have massive egos where if you just call them Joe, it's an affront against their ego. I'm the judge. No, you're Joe. And they also have a callous disregard for others and they're pathological liars. Every word that comes out of their mouth is a lie. And in anything that you and I do that is seen as a threat to the perception that they are a government and that they are an authority figure, that cannot be tolerated.
Well, it makes sense that the most corrupt people in the world would get into government and law enforcement, for many other reasons you mentioned as well. And one realizes that it's the very design of the system that is the root of the problem, as you said, where there is a mass of drugs, that's where the drug dealers are going to go. If there's weapons involved or money, I mean, there are other things within that legal world, like asset forfeiture that we've talked before about on Radio 314, that shows that a massive amount of property, money, and as extension than drugs and weapons as well, if it's other crimes, it just disappears into the system. So where does where does all this money go?
Well, the money is going to grease palms. It's going to keep people happy. It's going to further the conspiracy against us, where you're going to limit the amount of whistleblowers because you're buying them off. You've got something on them. This is why you have things like the Dutroux affair, which is a nice way of putting that, of course, where you've got people compromised so that you minimize the risk of somebody blowing the whistle. And if they do, they've already been discredited. They already have the goods against them to discredit them. That's why I mentioned it's self-perpetuating. They've got you coming and going. They know that if you blow the whistle, you'll be discredited. I mean, look what they did to Snowden. They couldn't look at what he was and try to go after and somehow defend about what he was presenting. They had to go after him personally. Oh, he's just a disgruntled. No. He's just blowing the whistle on you guys. He's one of these psychopaths that grew, had a little bit of a conscience left, and it got to him. And that happens. But all these palm greasing and all these things that they do, and the immunity that they give each other, when those judges and those prosecutors give the police officer immunity, that forms a bond to the prosecutor. That forms a tighter bond. It's just a civil, it's a basic sales gimmick. Give the customer something for free, which is already included in the price of the car anyway, let's say, and then they feel obligated to, they feel obligated to them. It goes back to the Stockholm Syndrome you mentioned before. the victims have it as much as the perpetuators of the system, the cops and the prosecutors too. They feel a bond to the system that has provided all this support for their friends and family. You know, how many Republicans are going to want to admit that even though they love college football, that they're socialists?
Well, that's a good one. By the way, we get a. I've been working on a more detailed explanation as well on the Stockholm Syndrome. We have a video on that coming out later where we go back to 1972 and what actually happened there in that bank. It's very interesting, and of course, how this. The larger extension to that is how this psychological phenomenon applies to the world today and how most people are in that situation, whether they, you know it or not. And there's a lot of interesting theories behind that, actually, why that is the case. But, Mark, before we continue and talk more, I have just so many more questions. The more you talk, the more questions I have for you. But why don't we talk a little bit about your website, give out some of the details, and, of course, I want to give you an opportunity to talk more about Government Indicted, your latest book. And then before that, you had Adventures in Legal Land. Tell us how people can get a hold of copies of these books.
Just markstevens.net. Everything is available on the website. I'm actually out of Adventures right now, so you can go to governmentindicted.com and you can order through a friend of mine who's actually in the book. And my radio show for questions or comments if someone's having a problem with a bureaucrat attacking them is on every Saturday from 4 to 7 Eastern Time.
Very interesting. Governmentindicted.com. Check out the book there. We're going to have that linked up. And then, of course, the main website, markstevens.net, will get you more information. Well, we're going to carry on here in the next segment. Stay with us, Mark. We'll be right back with more here in a little bit. In the second hour, we'll discuss more examples of calls he's made to various people in government, IRS agents, and other legal folk and their consequent and surprising admissions. Call of shame, he calls these. We discuss if there are rights, like human rights. And I think the bigger lesson we can take away from this is that if we simply change our perception and also the language we use to describe those who force their made-up rules upon us, then we get a clarity that most people do not have. When it comes to reality. Continue to listen at redicemembers.com. All our second hours and programs older than 1 year is in our member archives. You can subscribe and dig into our vast knowledge vault with diverse research and opinion. And by the way, Josh Del Sol on Smart Meters and his film Take Back Your Power is just around the corner. And in the meantime, we say thank you so much for listening. And of course, I hope you continue with us. And we'll speak to you after the break. More with Mark Stevens is coming up. Cheerio.